what a privilege it is to speak to you. I've been following your The Greatest Truth Never Told and Silver Bullet, Silver Shield for some time, and yeah. Had really for my wife in a lot of ways. You know, she was along with a lot of things I had to say and what we were doing and all that. But what really, you know, put her in kind of lockstep with the way men like you or myself think it was your videos, The Greatest Truth Never Told. They're excellent. Mm-hmm. Like, I really appreciated them.
Have you been able to go through the academy yet?
No, it's I actually signed up for your I forget the name of it on your website there. Silver, I'm having trouble with my
The Silver Shield Report.
That's right.
Yep.
But I work most Sundays, mm-hmm. so I'm not there for the the conferences and stuff like that. But
it's okay, that's why I record them.
Yeah,
it's as best true. As I can. The last one got a little messed up, but whatever.
Right now, just a little technical thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing you're on a webcam, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
If you click, how do I...
beneath your name on the little okay. Skype thing, there should be a little okay. pop-up bar, and there's a little camcorder with right. probably a red line through it.
All right,
just click that and. You should be live. If you have a webcam, I don't even know if you have
No,
webcam.
I don't. It was only a small portion of my screen, though, and it was a little bit distracting. So okay. It's good now. I have it full size. So
okay.
It's excellent.
All right.
A little bit of background, I guess. Mm-hmm. About 6 months ago, a Montreal film company came here and filmed part of a documentary about preparedness and prepping and survivalism and all that. And I agreed to take part in it because the director assured me that it would be non-sensational and it wouldn't be, you know, like portray us as some kind of, you know, wingnut and thing mm-hmm. like that. But I have no doubt that, like, that's not the direction you're going to go at all. I have no doubt about that. But my intent on saying that is I haven't done a lot of interviews. Uh-huh. I'm not polished. That's the information okay. and the details about... anything with regards to emergency preparedness and preparation and stuff. I have an excellent grasp on that. I consider myself an SME on that, but as far as being polished in an interview, it might be a little,
you might be just a normal person with a lot of knowledge. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So what ended up happening with that documentary? Did you get twisted or?
No, they haven't released the short version of it yet. There's okay. When I spoke with the producer and that, it'll be put on the documentary channel, I guess, initially. But initially, they have to submit a short version. And then the people that funded it decide whether they want to produce a long version of it.
Yeah.
So I guess the short version is in production right now and okay. set to be released. I haven't seen it yet. So
it's funny that you should mention that because I actually had a gentleman who represented a studio that does 1 hour documentaries for A&E and History Channel and, you know, all these kind of American cable channels out here. And he actually had a contract from a major TV station, so I imagine it's HBO or A&E or one of these type things, to do an embed into a militia group in Wisconsin or Michigan or something like that. And so he has this $1 million contract just to do a documentary based off of that.
Great.
And when he started to look into to see if he actually wanted to do this, he said that the story wasn't compelling enough. He just got the feeling like there is nothing substantive behind most of these militia groups that they're, you know, that they say that they, you know, for the Constitution and the Bible, but at the end of the day, it's a bunch of guys running around the woods playing G.I. Joe, and that there really wasn't a political or a philosophical or a real something that was going to come out of that. And in his research, he came across my articles back before I had even done videos. And one of them that he ran across was the 5 stages of awakening.
Right.
And we had talked for quite a while, and he was trying to feel me out to see what it was. But he said, Chris, you've tapped into something that I haven't seen in a while, and there is something very substantive there. You know, would you mind exploring, you know, creating a documentary about this? And I said, well, quite honestly, I think the best thing for us to do is the Five Stages of Awakening, because it would take people through the personal awakening process. And I said, there's also a societal process that we can explore with the collapse of the dollar, which I think is 100% mathematical. But you could say, you know, in the off chance of a dollar collapse, this is what, you know, humanity would go through. So we spent probably about an hour and a half talking. And at the end of the discussion, I told him, I said, now you run into a very, and he got and followed and probably still does follow all the work that I do. But at the end of the day, I told him, I said, the problem isn't, you know, that this content isn't good. It's that majority of humanity is in denial, and they don't want to see the end of this paradigm. And certainly the guys that would cut you a check, it doesn't benefit them to fund awakening, you know, a couple hundred thousand or a million right. people to this reality. It's far better to feed them alternate history, or when aliens attack, or, you know, dino wars or shark attack, like just nonsensical fluff that would get just amount the same ratings. He got back to me probably about a couple weeks later and decided not to do it. And I told him, I said, but keep in touch. I said, after this collapse happens, this information will be far more popular than Justin Bieber or anything else out there, when humanity all of a sudden has to come to the shocking realization that they're totally unaware, that they were totally led astray, and that they're going to be craving information like this, unfortunately, after they can do everything. So the group that you're talking to today is our group, and you're a member of us. And so we traded a couple emails. And I thought it would be good to get somebody who's got some expert background on this information, and basically wanted to see what you would recommend for the average prepper to make sure that they have, and kind of pick your brain, and well, hopefully make a pretty good call of it.
All right, excellent. Sounds good.
So where do you want to start, and you know, what's kind of the first of all? Let's talk about how you got to where you are today.
Okay, I guess it was probably 2008 when the financial crisis of 2008, and really, I guess, in September when things got really bad, that I started examining, like, I lost a large portion of a pension plan that I had, and started, I'm the type of person that once I get involved in something, I go at it 100%, and I started reading, and, you know, I thought I was fairly informed. I have a degree in philosophy, I'm well-rounded, have a lot of different life experience and all that. And then I started reading into stuff, and I was exposed to men and teaching and things that I had never been exposed to before. And almost overnight, I became a silver bug. I didn't know anything about it. I had no idea at all where to buy silver. I went to the internet and typed in, you know, buy silver Canada, And my first purchase was at a major bank in Canada, and I went in, and, you know, you go walk into a bank today, everything's electronic. You know, you may get a receipt at the end of your transaction, but everything's electronic. And I went in there and spoke with the teller, and they directed me to the manager. I went over to the manager, and they went over to a filing cabinet and got this big old book out of the filing cabinet. And I told them, you know, I think it was 30 ounces of silver that I wanted, and they wrote it all out by hand in this book and said it'll be here next Wednesday, and gave like ripped off a portion of it, a tab, like a dry cleaning receipt,
yeah,
and handed it to me and said it'll be here next Wednesday, you can pick it up. Mm-hmm. And I left, and probably about 3 months later, a lot of things were happening in as well around this, and I went back for another purchase. I said to my wife, I said, we've saved up a little bit more money. We should, you know,
put more into
transfer that wealth that we have into real money, right? And I went back to the bank and spoke with the same manager. She got the same book out again, and I was the last entry. In 3 months in a major Canadian bank, no one had purchased silver. And that, it stunned me. I couldn't believe that. Like, just you know, I was new to this. I had no idea. But even then, just thinking that, like, why am I the only one doing this, you know? Hmm. And then at the same time, we started looking at farming practices. We're in a rural setting in Ontario, and our neighbors have a broiler operation, chickens, and we became friends with them. And the more that you know, that relationship grew, the more information we found out about how they raised the chickens you know, their crops and all that kind of stuff, and started looking at, and we'd always been healthy eaters. We'd always, you know, we didn't eat any junk food, sure. You know, well-prepared meals and all this, but never anything like, you know, thinking organic or non-GMO or hormone-free or anything like that. And I started looking into that, and the information just, and the process, just how they grew food, like the chickens, and it stunned me. And,
yeah, it's sickening.
You know, like, yeah, and like, you know, the turnaround time, I think, is around 7 weeks in the average broiler barn. Right now, we're growing chickens in our backyard, mm-hmm. and it's 12 weeks that we have them.
And they're half the size.
Exactly. And then, you know, after 6 or 7 weeks, all the chickens in their barn, well, I think the statistic is 80% have a limp, right? Because they've put on so much weight so quickly that their legs can't, you know, handle it. And the conditions, like, the, you know, just...
Never
just,
seeing sunlight, and they're walking around on feces, so they're loaded up with antibiotics. And it's
exactly, yeah. You know, exactly. And so it was like, that's not something, you know, you think chicken, everyone says, you know, eat chicken, it's healthy for you, it's good for you, and all yeah. that. And I was like, looking at that, I was like, you know, maybe we should start looking at alternative sources
or milk.
For meat, right?
Milk is the same thing.
Exactly, exactly. And so we started looking at non-GMO seeds, and my wife, her parents at one time owned a nursery, so she had a good handle on how to grow plants and save seeds and things like that. So that was, you know, that's her forte. That just took right off, right? Mm-hmm. Like we have bean seeds at home right now, and I can't say that, you know, each seed is a sixth generation seed, but we've got six crops off. Well, it's actually seven right now. This past one we just replanted, mm-hmm. Off the same seeds. So, you know, we planted seeds, you know, like seven crops ago now, and those seeds have, you know, we've saved seeds from each crop, mm-hmm. And then we're able to grow them, right, and continue to do that kind of thing. We've always had our feet into that kind of thing, but never as much as today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have about 3/4 of an acre of property right on the edge of town, and we can grow, like, in just in that small amount of property, probably 40% of our backyard is garden. We can grow enough food. We have a family of six that we don't have to buy a lot of fruits and vegetables, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we do supplement, and we know some farmers in the area sure. that grow organically and things of that nature. But like last year or this spring, actually, like we had carrots from our garden till the end of March, the beginning of April, mm-hmm. you know, that we had stored and stuff like this. And I was talking to someone last night and about all this as well. And I said, you know, it's kind of funny and it may sound silly or whatever. But another thing that kind of got me into this whole, I guess I'm taking you down the long path rather than give you a short answer,
but
sorry.
Because we all resonate with this. We all have our different steps of awakening. Yeah. So.
And the other thing was, like, we've never had cable TV. We've never had a satellite. You know, we have a TV and it's hooked up to a DVD player or whatever, and mm-hmm. we'll rent a movie or whatever, right? And we generally don't watch any commercial TV at all. And we never have. And my children wanted, you know, something that they could watch, you know, like, on a weekly basis or something. So, you know, we went out and I seen the whole box set of Little House on the Prairie. Mm-hmm. So I went and bought that for them, and there's like 9 seasons. So I sure. figured they're good to go for, you know, a long time. Right. Yeah. And I started watching with them, and I'd watch it when I was a kid. But I wasn't watching it as a show. I was watching it saying, you know, and I know it's only a depiction of pioneers, but these people knew how to do everything.
Yeah.
Like they knew how to grow their own food. They knew how to store their food. They knew how to hunt. They knew, you know, the weather conditions.
Medical
they knew
care.
How,
yep.
all those type of things, how to make their own clothing, you know, and as a community, you know, each, like, you know, when one piece, when one person had a farm implement, the other needed, they shared it, you know, and all the talents and skills they had. And I started doing a lot of reading in that. And I came across an article written by someone, I don't remember who it was, but he was talking about the same thing. And he was some kind of data entry person. And he was talking about how his father had all these skills.
Yep.
And his father was able to, you know, hunt and fish and you know, camp. And when he was a child, he took him out and he did all these things. But his grandfather knew how to do everything. You know,
sure.
His grandfather had come over from the old country and hacked out a living with his own hands. And how he didn't know how to do anything that wasn't electronic.
Yep.
And, you know, those are skills, like those skills that we've had for thousands of years as humans. I want to pass on to my children. I want my children to, you know, be able to put their hands in the ground, get their hands dirty, know how to grow food, know how to store food, you know, like, which way's north if they're in the middle of the bush, know, you know, like all the things that humans have ever known.
Sure.
And in the last generation or two, we've just lost.
Well,
you know,
there's a reason for that is because that it's not profitable to be doing that. And that's why I try to tell people is whatever you're doing now most likely will become completely obsolete when the dollar collapses, that you know, you need to develop real world skills and talents. And the wonderful thing, Chris, is that these things that you know, are very strange to us, once you start doing it, I guarantee will spark some new life, new energy inside of you, because it's resonating with who we are. You don't take, you know, 6,000, 10,000 years of humanity and stuff it into this electronic world and have that lost when you're reintroduced to it. I mean, you know, that's why they take these city kids out into the country so they can smell fresh air and see the sky and
Absolutely.
See the stars and stuff like that. And beyond the, you know, I keep talking about the anger chasm, the collapse, the riots, the wars and stuff like that. Humanity is going to realign itself back to where it once was. And it's a more sustainable way of life. You know, you talk about saving seeds. That's a very sustainable way of life. It's not, you know, it's not energy intensive. It's not profitable for companies to market that. But the reality is everything that's sustainable will become more valuable, more profitable to individuals than as opposed to the unsustainable nature of this corporate government military world that's currently winning the day.
No, you're absolutely right. And those are the things we want to pass on to our children, right? Like, I couldn't, you know, personally, I couldn't care less about, like, I don't even have a cell phone, you know, like, and it's not, you know, I'm not saying there's anything in and of itself wrong with a cell phone, but, you know, I work, where I work is about an hour away from where I live. And my wife's like, you know, if the car breaks down, or people ask me all the time, if the car breaks down, what are you going to do? And I said, oh, I'm going to do what men have done for, you know, hundreds of years or thousands of years. If their wagon or their horse or their vehicle breaks down, I'm going to walk to the next farm, you know,
and
ask for help, right? Yeah. Like, as a community, we should be helping people, you know, and we should be supporting each other rather than relying on some, you know.
And it's funny because, you know, you ask people, you know, what's the one thing that they can't live without, and it's usually the cell phone. But then you also ask them, what's the one thing you would most like to get rid of? And it's the cell
yes.
phone.
Absolutely. No, it's true, right? And, you know, so all those type of things, all those kind of things that happened at once with the 2008 financial collapse, looking into silver, you know, at the same time being exposed to, you know, modern farming practices and all that kind of got me along, you know. Like, I believe, like you do, you know, the financial collapse is, you know, is a certainty, you know. And the other thing I'd like to say just for a minute, mm-hmm. if I could, is I was exposed to the American Constitution at that time as well. And I started, you know, learning more about that and looking, I'm a Canadian, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what a beautiful document. Like, what an absolutely amazing document. Like, in my mind, it is the ultimate document ever written by human hands. It, you know, and how misaligned it is today, and what a tragedy that is. You know, the United States, to me, when I look at the United States, its history, the ideal of the United States and the Constitution it is a beacon of light. Like, it truly is, you know, and, you know, it shows the potential that people have, that, you know, this genius of the authors of that document, and, you know, and how they put safeguards in it to protect, you know, rights, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And to see that today, where it is today, you know, the election in November, the American election coming up in November, like, I mean, what's the difference?
Yeah.
You know, like, what, like, really, what is the difference between the two parties, yeah, right? Like,
the thing that I found most interesting about the Founding Fathers is that, you know, besides the document, I think it's a wonderful document. It's a great set of rules. It's a great operating system for society. It was also the first one to really go against a collective and favor the individual, whether it was a collective monarchy or collective system, and really empowered the individual by having all of society protect individual rights, and that the form of the republic that they were pushing forward really was against, you know, any sort of collective power, and it divided power on many different levels, and then multiple levels beyond that. And if you watch how the United States is degraded, is that more and more power gets back and centralized. And I think the genius of the Founding Fathers was that they decentralized power, knowing, or maybe not knowing, that psychopaths end up usually controlling any sort of collective state. But the other thing I found interesting about the Founding Fathers is this is the kind of thought and level of humanity can rise to when you're no longer worried about, the base of Maslow's pyramid and of worrying about paying for taxes and going to work and, you know, sending kids off to here and doing that. And it actually, you can free up your mind to think higher and higher thoughts. And these men obviously were pretty wealthy people at the time and were able to devote a great deal amount of intellect and energy towards this end. And whereas most people of leisure tended to want to consolidate their power, which I think is very indicative of all the elite, including our present elite, these guys said, hey, what can we do historically, to create a better way of life? And they came up with this. It's funny to me that, you know, I have great respect for the Founding Fathers and the Constitution, and obviously you do. But when I've gone through, talking about this publicly, there's a great deal amount of people who find them hypocritical, racist. Thomas Jefferson was a slave owner and, you know, all this stuff. And, one thing that always shuts up people, I said, well, I wonder what future generations will think of this generation. What was acceptable back then or the norm, was obviously very different than what we think of. And I can tell you what, I think future generations would look more unkindly upon this generation than certainly the Founding Fathers. And the Founding Fathers took that first step to change what they saw. They could have very easily George Washington could have very easily become the king of the United States, but he didn't. He chose not to. Adams and Jefferson could have drafted a constitution that would have enabled a new monarchy and a new class, and they chose not to. The fatal flaw, I think, was the Hamilton and bringing the central bank in and all that other stuff. But that's it's kind of getting a little off topic. So I wanted to bring you here today. The main goal of today is to basically learn about how we can better prepare ourselves. I think this collapse is coming hard and fast. I know that a lot of people probably have spent more money on silver than on basic preps. I know I certainly have, and I've been gearing my spending towards that, even though it's very difficult because I'm looking at $26, $27 silver, and I'm like, God, how much more can I buy? And while I do have a year's worth of buffer of food, and I certainly have more than enough, I think I have 10,000 rounds of ammunition. I'll never be able to fire that off. I do believe that we as silver buyers are going to have some sort of week, month, maybe, some other period where the price of silver relative to the loads amount of consumer goods out there we will have one last, you know, kind of big shopping trip, I think, before the collapse happens, before the store shelves empty, and before things, you know, really get bad. When silver starts moving up, it's not going to be time to, you know, hooray, we did it. It's going to be time to, all right, it's time to top off our supplies. It's time to get out of Dodge. It's time to lock the door. It's time to get serious about this, because things are going to get very bad very soon. And it's the, I think the rise of silver is going to lead to the downfall of everything else. And actually, I'm going to use this quote. One of our other members, I was lamenting to him. I said, I feel like there's so many things coming at us. We just don't know when it is or where it is, but we just know that we have to stay nimble. And he said that, yeah, it's sort of like standing in the middle of a 16-lane highway blindfolded, knowing a truck's going to hit you. He says the only thing you can do is be nimble and listen very carefully. And true. I think that's a brilliant analogy of where we are right now. This is we know that something big and bad's coming. We don't know what direction it is, but we know that the only two things that we can do is be nimble and listen very carefully. So, Chris, let's go through some of the things that you feel are most necessary to get people prepared, whether it's now or that last hurrah shopping trip. You know, so let's go down what you came up with.
Okay. The first thing that I would say is skills. You know, everyone, a lot of things I read or different experts on this subject, you know, start talking about, you know, storing food and storing water and water purification and all those different types of things. And absolutely those are essential. But you need to develop skills. You need to be able to grow your own food, learn how to grow your own food, learn how to store your own food, get books, you know, don't rely on the internet, because if the internet ever goes down for whatever reason, you'll need a hard copy. Get hard copies, get books. And you can go to your library and there's all kinds of books in there that tell you how to do things and practice doing it. Like, learn those. When I talk to people about this, I always use the term pioneer spirit. You know, you look at people 200 years ago, they came from Ukraine or Ireland or wherever, went to the prairies, you know, with a wagon full of supplies, you know, and some skills, and hacked out a living. And, you know, in a lot of cases in the proper community, they were prosperous. So we need to redevelop that. We need to capture that. We need to know how to do things, you know. Preparing and stockpiling and storing food and all that kind of stuff is for the short term. It's to get you past an emergency, whether that emergency is, you know, a short emergency, a week long event, or a long emergency, a year. Eventually, people are going to have to take, you know, the responsibility of providing for themselves or their families in their own hands. And, you know, stored food runs out and it needs to be replenished, and you need to be able to find water supplies and get your own, you know, permanent water supply and things like that. So learning those skills, you know, learning how to can, learning how to, you know, use your cold room. So many houses today, even in our society, still have cold rooms, and people don't know how to use them, you know. The humidity level on the floor is different than the humidity level on the ceiling, and, you know, where to store potatoes as opposed to carrots in that room, or all those type of things. Learn that. Learn those skills that people have had for hundreds, thousands of years, you know, that were basic survival skills for people that people did without even thinking. Learn how to make your own bread, you know, simple things like that. Get your hand into the dirt in the garden and you know, learn how to grow food without pesticides or herbicides, because if anything ever, you know, dramatic happened, you know, for a sustained period of time, a lot of those things that we rely on today, like, we don't use them personally, but a lot of people, you know, rely on them, aren't going to be available. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot different, you know, to grow something that, you know, that insects and fungus and stuff like that can get at, you know, and knowing how to protect your food while it's growing during those stages.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I recommend people is to do it now when your life doesn't depend on it, because it's a whole different mindset when you're actually have to do it. Learning under that kind of stress might not be the most successful thing. And I agree with you that skills are the most important. I tend to, you know, talk to people. I said, you know, get your mindset straightened away. And that goes right into your skills, because unless you have the mindset of committing to this and being aware of it, you'll never learn the skills. And then once you do learn the skills, that is a means probably better than stockpiling, because you will become more valuable in society, and you'll be able to garner whether it's food or money or whatever. Those skills will be more marketable and needed. And it's also a good way of kind of protecting yourself in a new community where you can do that. You talk about the pioneer mindset. Yes, you can go ahead and learn everything. But I think it's going to be better to become a master of one thing so that you can market that, become more efficient at that, and have that kind of, be able to throw off much more offshoot than you would if you became average on a lot of things.
Absolutely. You look at the communities, the pioneer communities that were successful, and they all had, like, for lack of a better word, a trade, mm-hmm. something they focused on. I go back to the silly little House on the Prairie example, and he, Charles Ingalls was a carpenter as well, right? Mm-hmm. He knew how to do things and he knew how to provide, but, the fallback that he always had was carpenter skills. And mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely true. Like, develop a skill that, that your hobby. A lot of times what we do as our pastime is what we're good at, what we enjoy, and if it has like this kind of pioneer spirit sense to it, develop that skill. But, we want to be well-rounded as well. And I think you're absolutely right that we can't be, masters at everything, but we should have a basic understanding of a lot of things, mm-hmm. Something I just picked up recently and I'm really interested in is cordwood houses. And I didn't even know about it 6 months ago. Like, here I am, looking at all this stuff all the time. Pardon?
Is that a log cabin?
Yeah, it's just like a log cabin, except it's cut into 12-inch, the wood is cut into, 10 to 12 to 16-inch pieces. Mm-hmm. And, they're piled. So it looks like, your log pile and surrounded by timbers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's examples of that in Canada that are, 250 years old, So something like that is, just expose yourself to it. Just know that know that it exists. As far as preps about storing like food, mm-hmm. A lot of people talk about the 72-hour kid and having a minimum of 3 days supply. To me, that's not enough.
No.
Like 72 hours is good for your car, in my opinion, yeah. To get from point A to point B, that's what 72 hours. And if you're at your home and something happens, 72 hours, you run out of what you need way before the 72 hours because of stress, because of poor planning, because of, all these other factors that you didn't consider. And you'll, most likely be in, if it's a shorter emergency, in the apex of the emergency with nothing, mm-hmm. So, all you're doing is prolonging it. Like the absolute minimum that I would suggest for anyone in their house, and I'm not talking about long-term storage, I'm talking about just, regular in their house, for emergency situations is 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like the absolute minimum, right? And that should be food that you're used to eating that, and that's the other thing. Like, I'm not going to tell anyone how to eat or what they should eat or anything like that, but go back. In my opinion, it's a lot better to go back to food as close to the natural state as you can get it, right? Yeah. Like, eat, if you can eat something as without any processing, eat it that way.
Yeah, wrong.
And then that's what we do, right? And then generally those foods are very easy to store. So have a couple weeks worth of provisions, in your house that way. As far as long-term storage, I would be uncomfortable with anything less than 4 months per person in my family, mm-hmm. and an additional 4 months for someone else that I wasn't counting on.
Yeah,
my grandma comes and she happens to be visiting at the time. Something happens, or the neighbor, or whatever. Right, that it's an additional buffer. Right. Mm-hmm. You're looking at, like, if you're getting into the logistics of it, you're looking at about 25 pounds per person per month of grains. you know, and that can be like a lot of that's personal preference, whether, you know, it's rice, barley, wheat, oats, anything like that, rye, get that mix, right? And so you're looking at around, you know, 25 pounds per person per month. So you want about, as a minimum, 100 pounds, I would suggest, for 4 months for each person in your family, right?
Well, the other and the thing, Chris, the other thing I don't think a lot of people are taking in consideration is that if we do end up in that that kind of environment where it's, you know, desperate, you're going to be expending a ton more calories.
Absolutely.
So what you're consuming today, even though it's a lot of junk calories, you're going to need a lot more hearty, good calories in the future, because you're going to be doing a lot of physical labor to sustain your life. Whether it's, you know, walking a lot more because the car doesn't work, or doing, you know, hard work out back or stuff like that, you're going to be expending a lot of calories. So, what I try to tell people to do is, you know, think about not 2,000 calories for a man, but more like 3,000 calories for a man.
That's right.
And then take those calories and start banking in calories. View your bank account as, you know, how many calories you have saved up, and then start doing the calculations, where you can say, you know, a young child, you know, may only need 1,200 or 1,500 calories. A woman may need, you know, 2,000 calories, and a man would need 3,000 calories. And then start doing that. And I say 3 or 4 months is good per person, because there is a point where, you know, having, you know, 3 years worth of food, you know, are you really going to go 3 years with absolutely no food coming around or stuff like that?
Right.
Probably not. And then, you know, the kind of food that you have, you know, you're going to be kind of bored of it. Like, you can overdo food, you know, even with my ammunition. I mean, 10,000 rounds, I'll probably end up selling some when it gets there. But, you know, you can go overboard, but to not have enough is, to me, absolutely insane in this kind of, you know, environment that we're going to be going into.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. Like, you have to take a holistic approach to this. Like, you know, and when I was first buying silver, and like, I wasn't taking a holistic approach. And then I started looking, okay, I got silver, but what am I going to eat? Mm-hmm. You know, if I, you know, during an emergency or during a, you know, a time of upheaval or something. So it's a holistic approach. And I think you're right. Like, you know, I talk to a lot of different people about, when suggesting things people buying things from me and stuff like that. And they'll say, okay, I got this squared away, and that's all they have, you know? And I said, well, what about this? Well, I never thought about that. Well, you need to think about contingency. You need to think about, you know, how are we going to operate, you know, in a multitude of situations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, putting all your eggs in one basket or, you know, stockpiling, you know, you're right. Like, 2 years of food. And, you know, I know there's other people in the community that say, you know, a year's worth. And personally, that's what I have per mm-hmm. person. Like I say, the 4 months or so is a minimum, right?
Yeah.
But more than that, you're right. Like, you need to know those skills to replenish the food, right? It's the same thing as water storage. Like, when you look at water storage, you should have a way to store water, and you should have a way to filter water.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's no good just having a way to store water, because eventually that will run out,
yeah.
You know, if you don't have access to clean water. So having a way that you can filter water, or purify water, or have access to clean water is an excellent way to, you know, replenish your store.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of look at it that way, right? So, you know, a lot of times when people come, they'll want to buy, you know, a water storage tank, like a 250-gallon tank off me. And, you know, a lot of times people say, I want two of them because I want 500 gallons of water. And I was like, I would suggest that, you know, you buy a good passive filter that you can replenish the one.
Yeah.
And you know, like, that is 250 gallons of water is a large supply of water,
mm-hmm.
you know, for an emergency situation.
Yeah, because
and
you're also
now,
not going to be consuming water the way that you are. Again, it's a different reality.
That's right.
You're not going to have, you know, your daughter in the shower for a half hour singing in the shower,
right.
Or filling up this gigantic tub and bubbles and all that other stuff. It's going to go down to, I think the way to do it is a gallon per person for food and drinking. per day, and then another gallon for sanitation, and that should be about what you're going to end up doing. You know, and at least that's what we kind of did in the Marines, like when we were trying to figure out our supplies. So start
and that's that's generally the convention, right? That about a gallon per day for food consumption, water consumption, and then a gallon per day for sanitation and, you know, other uses, right? But, you know, like in Canada where I live, we have access to water everywhere. You know, like, I mean, you have to look around where you live too and see, you know, okay, there's a pond, you know, and you have to take, you know, like the law into consideration and all that kind of stuff. But where can I get access to water in, you know, in my current environment?
Yeah.
Where, you know, do I have a sump pump in my house? Can I purify that water somehow? You know, like, because it's groundwater, right? And you know, all those kind of contingency plans, right? Rather than just rely on, you know, I have my store and I'm good. You know, I have my supply and I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, look around, be aware of your situation. Like, you know, in the Marines, they, I guess they would have taught you about, you know, condition white and condition yellow and condition orange and red and all those different, you know, situational awareness skills that you have when you're there. People need to get out of the condition white where they're just walking around blind everything around themselves and get into that condition yellow, right? Where you know, they're aware of what is going on around them. They're aware of, you know, threats and danger, and whether that's financial collapse or whether that's walking down, you know, a dark street at night, people need to, you know, prepare themselves for those type of situations, right?
And that's what the Marines were, you know, the main thing was improvise, adapt, and overcome.
Absolutely.
It was, I mean, you think about how the Marines fight, it's not, they have, you know, all this gear and all these weapons. The most differentiating factor about the Marines is their mindset, their ability to take any situation and make it to their advantage. And that, to me, is that kind of warrior mindset that is going to be very valuable in this kind of ever-changing environment. And that's why I always tell people mindset is your number one prep. So, you know, a lot of people give me crap about, you know, charging and, you know, having all these things. And I tell people, I said, you know, you could have all the preps you want, all the guns you want, but I tell you what, if your mind isn't going to, you know, going to be ready for this collapse, you know, you may die in the room with all those preps simply because you were, you know, you kind of lost your mind. And I think a lot of the stuff that we're doing is really preparing our minds for this collapse and being a pillar for our local family and community. That is going to be devastated by this. I mean, the psychological trauma of the world coming apart for people who are now totally unprepared to continue living post-paradigm is going to be a drain. And that, to me, is that number one prep is kind of getting your mind and your act together, because you're going to have to be strong for a lot of other people who could not or would not prepare for themselves.
Absolutely. I agree with that. You know, like, people spend a lot of their time, you know, so blind to the situation aware around them. Like, recently I heard a topic or a statistic that 50 million Americans rely on food stamps. Now, I look at the current situation, financial situation in the world, and I'm no expert. I'm just, you know, I'm an observer. I see what's going on. I try and keep aware. And during the Great Depression, the thing that always comes to mind that, you know, aside from the Dust Bowl images, is soup lines. You know, like, you always see pictures of men standing in these, you know, long soup lines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you take all the people that are on food stamps currently in the U.S. and put them in soup lines, and what does it look like?
It's impossible.
You know? Exactly. And you know, well, it's worse than in a lot of ways.
Most of America back then still farmed. I think we
That's
were
right.
60% agricultural or whatever the thing is, but now we're only 3%. You know, it's a complete impossibility. The average age of farmers now, I think, is like 58, 59 years old. We've totally lost that, and it's going to become very popular. I think the young kids would be very wise to learn about farming and stuff like that, because that's going to be the new stockbroker, advertising exec, military contractor. That's where the real wealth is going to be made. And it's really going to benefit those young kids who do have, you know, the energy and skills to be able to do that.
No, I think you're absolutely right. You know, like, learning those skills, learning that mindset, adapting to, you know, your current situation, and you know, being able to have the foresight to say, where is this going? What is going to happen? What skills do I need to learn? You know, how am I going to adapt? You know, not being blindsided by what's going on, right? And that's the real, you know, the danger of where we're at right now is, you know, is going to be how many people are blindsided by this. How many people are just taken, you know, completely aback by, you know, the collapse of the financial system. I think that, you know, is the most likely possibility of, you know, a long emergency, right? Or a future crisis, or, you know, a coming crisis.
I have a painter here. I was just talking with him, and, you know, of course, you know, he says, oh, what do you do? And I gave him my website and stuff like that. And he said, you know, how does this collapse play out? And I told him about the food and fuel. And I think everybody gets that. And then the next thing I told him about was, you know, the people on antidepressants. And he goes, well, what about me? Both me and my wife are on, you know, diabetic medication. You know, what do we do? I said, well, yeah, what do you do? Because you can't stockpile up on that stuff. I said, I would suggest that you, you know, go raw for 30 days and get off of that and put your body in better shape. Because that your life is going to depend on that. And it's all about getting healthy, getting sustainable, walking away from this garbage food and garbage investment products and politics and all this stuff, and get back to what's real and sustainable.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Like, you know, we have an emergency preparedness business that we started in Ontario, because once we started getting into this, you know, there was no one in Ontario. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, I have a good job, you know, mm-hmm. and the job that I have currently, I make over six figures. I don't need this business. I have this business because, you know, it's a way for me to help people. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to lose money on it, obviously. Sure. But, you know, I'll spend 2 or 3 hours with people talking with them about, you know, how to store food, or what they should be storing, or how to supplement what they have now. Mm-hmm. And so often, you know, when I'm talking to people, I'll say to them, and you need to get into shape. Like, yeah. I'm not trying to be ignorant. I'm not trying to be rude or whatever, but, you know, you need to take the bull by the horns here. Yep. and prepare your body as well. Prepare your mind, prepare your body.
Well, and that you know, also helps prepare your mind, because I know that when I was most fit, my brain was sharp as a tack. I mean,
absolutely.
I was almost a certifiable psychopath by the time I was out of the Marine Corps. But man, I was laser focused. My attention, my ability to take on any problems, I could not be stopped, because I was physically fit and very mentally aware. And now I got blogger body. I've been sitting in front of a computer for almost 3 years now. And I've been trying to get out and do more physical activity. But I find that it's just like right now, I was like, I'm going to have a lot more time to work out when everything goes down, but it's not the case. I mean, I get out of breath going up the stairs, carrying my son. And it is going to be a very hard physical world on the other side. And that people do need to do that, especially if you're diabetic or, geez, you got, you know, high blood pressure or something like that. Chances are there's something wrong in your diet that you need to dramatically change in order to right that wrong in your system. And that's a very important survival skill, you know, on the other side of this collapse.
No, I think you're right. You know, in our society, we often look, in Western civilization, we often look for the easiest way out of things. You know, whether that's, I want to retire when I'm 55, yeah, or, you know, how is there an easier way to do this, when easy isn't always right, or the better way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we burn our own wood. We heat our house predominantly with wood. And like last year, I burned around 17 cord. This is just a small example.
Wow.
And most of the time, I try and cut all the wood that we burn. I have two sons that, you know, come out and help me, and we cut the wood and all that. But occasionally, you know, some years I can't cut all we need, and I buy it from an individual that I know. And last year when he came to deliver, I bought 8 cord off of him. And when he came to deliver it, he asked me to move my truck so he could back it up to the wood pile. And I said, no, dump it right where you're at. Mm-hmm. And it was about 30, 35 yards from the wood pile. And he's like, well, why would I do that when I can just back right up to the woodpile? Yeah. And I said, because I have two young sons in the house, you know, and this is a great way to get them outside, get them working, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, you know, labor, using their hands and their backs and yeah. stacking wood and taking responsibility for it.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and jokingly said, you're a bad father. And, you know, and I thought, like,
in this paradigm you are, but in the next you're the yeah. best.
You know, and how like lazy we've become in so many ways like that, right? Like, what is the easiest way I can get through this? You know, I'm going up one flight of stairs, and I'm not saying that I'm not guilty of this as well, sure. right? We all are. I'm not going to be a hypocrite like with regards to that. And, you know, I'm going up one flight of stairs, I'm going to take the elevator, you know, and then we go to the gym. If we do go to the gym to work out,
yeah.
well, you know, it the just doesn't make sense, moving. Right? Yep. No, absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, we get food and water and medicine and health. What other kind of key things that we can, you know, put our mind to and get ahead of the curve?
You know, a lot of things, a very common thing that people overlook is clothing. You know, if we have to, I sell a lot of, and I wear a lot of, military surplus clothing, like a lot of it is new old stock, so it's never been worn. It may be 20 years old, but it looks brand new, right?
Yeah. And when I hunt, has a lot of that.
Yeah. And when I hunt or work outside or stuff like that, that's the clothing I wear a lot, and it's very durable. Like it stands up. Like yeah. it's designed to be treated, you know, in rough conditions, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the clothing we have today, like civilian clothing, is just not up to par, right? And if we ever have to get back outside, or I should say, when we have to get back outside mm-hmm. and start taking ownership and responsibility for, you know, the actual physical
labor.
Thanks. We're going to need clothes that stand up, you know, like you go outside and walk through the bush and, you know, get down and dirty, you know, somewhere physically outside with, you know, the average pair of jeans or the average shirt
yeah.
and it wouldn't last a couple hours, right?
Yep.
And that's something that people often overlook. Like, I'm not saying dress up on all fatigues and run around, you know, like your nearest grocery
yeah.
store,
yeah.
you know, wearing a boonie hat and stuff like that, but prepare that way. Another thing that, you know, okay. I'm really big on.
I want to speak about that a little bit
yeah,
more.
Sure.
Because in the Marines, we would have our camis, and you know, I would basically pack one or two for 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
And regardless of how dirty they got, they would hold up and that they wouldn't rip or tear or smudge, and that they were easy to clean too. You know, you can really just dump some water on it, you know, scratch the dirt off the clothes. And it would be clean for the most part. And then the other thing is, I think that we kind of have forgotten is that we're wearing our essentially underwear outside everywhere. You know, we wear t-shirts, we wear, you know, jogging pants or, you know, even jeans or clothes. We have very delicate clothes. And, you know, in the Marines, you know, you have your underwear and t-shirt, but, you know, that you change on a more frequent basis than your overclothes.
Right.
Which would be the camis. And, you know, again, it doesn't have to be, you know, camouflage clothes. You can buy hunting gear. You can buy, you know, harder work clothes. You know, you can get, you go to some labor supply places, you know, even factory clothes. My brother-in-law's got factory clothes. They're clothes meant for work, and that's what we don't have. And I think it's a good point that you bring that up because, you know, that is going to be very important. And then also think about it from a kind of blending in. You know, I try to tell people, you know, if you're here, chances are you're going to have a lot of silver and chances are you're going to be very wealthy on the other side. I think it would behoove you to look the role instead of the next, you know, oligarch in your town or the next rich guy in your town, that you should look more blue collar and fit in and help out and do all this other stuff. So even from a, you know, kind of fitting in, I think it's very smart for people to be buying, you know, more of this kind of blue collar, heavy working clothes, you know, regardless of what your financial situation is.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. It's that, attitude in the military that some have about being a gray man, right? That you don't want to stick out, right?
Yep.
That you want to be, you know, you just want to be seen as, you know, one of the crowd, right? Or,
yep.
you know, you want to bring attention to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you like You're absolutely right about the work clothes. Like, there are different in Canada. We have different, you know, tough duck is one that comes to mind, right? Like, it's very durable material, you know, it's tight weaved. Same as military clothing. It's tight weaved, tight knit, you know, clothing that repels water and, you know, it's very easy to clean. And that's, you know, people overlook that all the time, right? You know, having, and something else I'd like to mention about that, whatever you buy the best quality that you can get.
Yes. Don't go like, cheap on this stuff.
Absolutely, right? Like, a lot of times, backpacks are infamous for this. You know, people will say, you know, they have their bug-out bag or their 72-hour kit in a backpack. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wouldn't last a day at Disneyland, their backpack, right? If you actually had to use it and stuff, you know, like, get stuff that is well-constructed, you know, has a reputation for being reliable and dependable, right?
Yep.
Focus. Spend the money that you have if you're going to buy something. You know, that would be my advice, right?
And one other thing is Gore-Tex. That was...
Absolutely, yeah.
God, when we had these rubber suits when I first got into the Marines, and right after 9/11, all of a sudden we had all this new money floating around, and we got Gore-Tex outerwear, and man, that was just a complete night and day to what we had. We had these green Gumby suits where literally just... plastic rubber suits that you would sweat like crazy inside, and you know, it didn't matter how much it rained, you were wet inside because you were sweating so much. And then you got Gore-Tex, all of a sudden now you're dry and dry, you know, because you didn't sweat as much. They would allow the sweat to come out and also keep you dry. It was very rugged. So yeah, get a good Gore-Tex suit. And also boots, man. I mean, the most important piece of gear that you could get is your boots, because if your feet don't work, the rest of you can be worthless out there. I mean, you know, good, comfortable Gore-Tex boots are, you know, they're $160, $180 bucks, but they're worth it. I have two pair of my Marine ones still downstairs, and I use them, I work in them, and they're great.
No, it's true. Like, you know, you take the I was going to get rain gear too, but you take that example that you brought up, and it's perfect, because in the wrong situation, you know, without the proper training, without, you know, the proper experience, you wear rubber, or cheaper rain gear, for example, just for an example, you know, or you're not quite sure about something, you start sweating, it gets cold. And, you know, all the issues that can lead to, hypothermia and, you know, the dangerous situation, just because, you know, maybe potentially rather than spending, you know, $40 or $50 on a, you know, a good Gore-Tex surplus, you know, like I have German Gore-Tex pants and coat from the German military, new old stock, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, it's cheap, and it's Gore-Tex, it's beautiful stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't have to worry about that other, you know, I don't have to worry about sweating in rubber and you know, it getting cold and getting hypothermia or getting sick or, you know, all those things. Being comfortable, you know, being able to focus outside on what I'm doing because I'm not uncomfortable.
Yeah,
right?
That's very key towards keeping your mind above the fray. You know, when you're miserable, your whole world closes in to 2 feet. You know, whether you have blisters on your feet or you're freezing to death, you literally don't care. I mean, geez, I remember being in Norway. We had a couple days without our even sleeping bags and just Gore-Tex and Polypro and out in just miserable weather. It gets to a point where you're like, you know what, fuck it, I just don't care anymore because I'm so miserable. Somebody can come over the hill and shoot me and I wouldn't care because I'm so miserable. And it's very important to keep a level of comfort, a level of humanity, so that you're able to stay ahead of the crowd, because if you devolve yourself down into you know, a position where you're just miserable, it's a threat to your security and your sanity, and your survivability. So yeah, invest in this type of stuff. And the best part is, like, geez, you buy a good pair of Gore-Tex, they will last you for 40 years. Like,
it's true. Yeah.
I mean, this is not like, this isn't like a new Apple iPad or something that's, you know, obsolete in, you know, 2-3 years, you know, purposely. This stuff lasts forever. Good tools last forever. You know, a good pair of boots, you know, depending on how well you use it or whatever, they're going to last you a long time. And these are things, this is real wealth. in the next paradigm.
No, you're right. My wife always says, you know, like, I just turned 40, and all the stuff that like outdoors activities, and, you know, like the older you get, it seems like in a lot of ways, you know, it's human nature to want to be more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I have different experiences in my life with the military, law enforcement, things of that nature. And when I was a young man, I was able to, you know, very easily do all this. I had the confidence and I had the focus to do these things. My wife always challenges me, you know, like, you know, in a good way, you know, like, you know, what would it be like if you slept outside in the rain with nothing again, you know, yeah. or slept under a truck, like, you know, you had to before or anything yeah. like that. Right. And, you know, so, you know, this summer I went out and I purposely, you know, went out and slept outside, like, right behind us is a bush, and I slept outside and it rained and I had nothing but a wool blanket, my clothes I was wearing and a wool blanket.
Yeah.
And I was miserable. And it, you know, I hadn't done something like that in years. And, you know, it may seem a little like out there, but you know what? I have the confidence now to say I got through that. You know,
yeah.
it didn't kill me. You know, it was pitch black. I couldn't see anything. But you know what? Here I am, right?
And that's what boot camp is all about. It's
exactly.
the psychological indoctrination that, you know, you put yourself through hell, but then you realized after the fact the most important lesson isn't inside of it. It's after the fact saying, you know what, I'll get through this, and I'm going to get through it successfully, and I'm going to get through it with flying colors. I just have to keep my mind, you know, focused on what I have to do, forget about the uncomfortableness, and focus on the things that I, you know, I can do. And that is the skill that is going to be kind of stick with you the most. And that's why, you know, you talk to guys that were out of the Marines for 40 years, you know, they still have in their mind their ability to do anything. And for the most part, they can, because whether you think you can or you can't, chances are you're right. And, you know, the guys that think that they can will. And, you know, I just think that's such a huge factor. And you have to learn to push yourself now while things are good so that you can, you know, have that sense of confidence to be able to overcome those things.
Oh, you're right. You know, you brought up something else about tools too. And I have a friend, and he actually works for a large investment company, and he's really struggling there because he's, you know, on, you know, for his integrity and his honesty, he's telling everyone to invest in gold and silver and you know, away from
Talk
all these.
Talk about a killer.
You know, yeah.
Can't make money off of that.
Horrible assets. And, you know, we have, you've probably heard of it, like Sprott. You know, gold and silver fund,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So this is where he directs a lot of it. But he's on, in a lot of ways, in the financial situation, on the front lines of this, and he sees a lot of it coming down the pipe before, you know, a lot of other people or, you know, people out there in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of his big thing is buying tools. And he goes on eBay all the time and buy, you know, 40 or 30 or 50 year old tools for next to nothing that people
yeah.
are just, you know, clearing out their garage or,
yep.
you know, their grandparents die or whatever, and they need to get rid of these tools, going to yard sales. And these are tools, like, why are they 40 years old? Because they're quality. They were made with, you know, workmanship and, you know, to a high standard, and they still function.
Yep.
Well, you know, what do you buy today at your average
garbage.
Hardware store that's going to last 40 years, right?
How about
and
this?
Investing,
I bought a, not a spade, but a, you know, kind of a tool to cut grass because I was putting in edging, and brought it home, hit the ground, bent it back and forth to open up the earth, and it broke right off. And I said, "You got to be kidding me!" Brought it back, and they sold me on a higher grade one, you know, to do that, and that one's been working fine. But you know, the idea that we even have tools that would fall apart in the first day of use, much less 40 years of use, it shows you how far we've come for this instant gratification, more profits, and not worrying about quality, because the companies and corporations know that if they sell things with a limited lifespan, well, they're going to have a customer in another year or 4 years or even a day if it falls apart.
No, it's absolutely true. And, you know, putting, like, you know, in the sense of preparing, you know, you are putting your wealth, you're putting your effort, your time into things like that, you know, that are going to, you know, after this current paradigm, you know, the financial collapse happens, you know, the death of the dollar, and we get back to, you know, how humans should live again. things like that are going to be worth their weight in gold, you know, like, you know, a tool that you can depend on, you know, like, and is going to help you to produce more food or produce more food, quicker or, you know, with less effort. Those, like, they're vital, you know, and they're often overlooked. And, you know, you go to yard sales today, you know, the right ones, maybe in more rural settings or eBay or whatever, and you're going to find them. You're going to find them for next to nothing. People don't value that anymore. You know, people don't place any.
It's funny because next to nothing, and yet they're probably more than what they were bought for back in the 40 years ago because the dollar's been depreciated. So, yeah, you're buying a tool for $5, but chances are it cost $1 back then, you know?
It's true, right? Yeah. Absolutely, you know? You're absolutely right.
All right, so we covered food, shelter, seeds. Yeah, how about first aid? I think that's another thing where I think most people are kind of really way behind the curve. Like we're always relying on, you know, running off to the emergency room for stitches and stuff like that. So what can you say about first aid?
Yeah, the first thing you need to do is to take, like in Canada, we have St. John's, right? That is the predominant instructor of first aid courses and stuff like civilian courses. And I would suggest that, you know, anyone who's serious about this type of thing, go out and take that, you know, take basic first aid, advanced first aid if you can afford it, CPR, all those type of skills that you need to know, right? And get used to, like a lot of you know, you're right, we do run to the emergency room and people all the time and people have lost, you know, like, the capability of dealing with emergency situations and you need to formulate that in your mind again, you know, like if, you know, my wife or, you know, my husband or my brother or whatever cuts himself and he has a big gash on his arm, not only can I help him, you know, and stabilize the situation, but am I going to be able to deal with that, you know, like on a personal level? Like, am I going to freak out? Am I going to make the situation worse, right?
I'm notorious for getting queasy around that type of stuff. Like, I sliced my hand open, taking tape off my weapon in Norway, and I jammed my knife right into the palm of my hand. And I remember looking at it, and I was like, "Oh man, I'm feeling gross because I could see it would look just like meat." And first, I could see right through it, and then all of a sudden, the blood came gushing out, and I'm getting queasy even thinking about it.
The cold sweats.
Yeah.
So once again, the skills, you know, learning the skills, right? And then, you know, after you have the skills, or at the same time, concurrently, get you know, not the you know, get a basic first aid kit, know what you have and know how to use it, but then supplement it with other things, you know, like I have a bunch of Israeli bandages, you know, those are excellent for they're like a field dressing. Okay. You know, so they're vacuum packed, like, you know, I think the average American field dressing is, you know, is sterile in some kind of canvas type pack, right? Like that's rubberized or whatever to protect it from water and to keep it sterile and stuff like that. These ones are like vacuum packed and they're very small. They're a little bit longer than a deck of cards. So, you know, they're not bulky and all that. And having stuff like that in a first aid kit is excellent. Like an Israeli bandage, having a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. And for bigger wounds and stuff like that. When I first started my business, someone else called me up and asked me, "Do you have any surgical kits?" And I was like, "Surgical kits?" I was like, "You know what? Like, no."
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of weird, and so I started looking into it, and I found some of just a small little, you know, it's sutures and some forceps and tweezers and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, started supplying them.
Yeah.
And I asked him what he wanted them for, and he was going to take a trip to Africa, I forget which country, and he put it in his backpack. So yeah. If something happened to them, he could go into the hospital and hand them, you know, something that was he knew was sterile. He knew the history of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So even having something like that, you know, that I'm not talking about, you know, like major operations or something that, but if a crisis gets bad and you need to deal with minor wounds and stuff like that on your own and stuff like that, something like that would be very handy, and it's often overlooked, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to think, you know, you want to think like, you know, you look at the average paramedic, and I'm not saying you're going to have a full, you know, ambulance or
yeah, if you don't have something to do like a tracheotomy or something like that.
but what do they use, you know, on a day-to-day basis? And they deal with all kinds of emergencies, right? And that's kind of where you want to go. Like, and it's easy information to get, right? You want more than just like what you'd refer to as, you know, as a boo-boo bag or a boo-boo kit, right? More than bandages, you know, more than surgical tape, you know, you want to build it up a little bit. So, you know, peroxide and iodine and things like that to deal with wounds and things of that nature.
Well, and the reason why we're talking about this, because again, you know, just like how you're going to end up consuming a lot more calories, you're going to need more physical wear. This more physical life is also more dangerous. You know, you talk about chopping wood. Well, geez, that's how people end up chopping limbs off, or, you know, accidentally doing something or falling down with carrying wood, or, you know, we don't live in a very dangerous environment because we don't do anything. But when humans get outside and they're cold or clumsy, or, you know, not ready to deal with, stepping on a log, you know, when it's got that fresh dew on it, and realizing it's a lot slipperier and you end up falling down or something like that, we're totally immune out there. And as a result, we're going to see more injuries. Maybe not even work. You could be dealing with riot situations, you know, bullets, something of that nature. And there is not going to be 911 available for you to deal with this. So, these are all skills that, you know, people should at least know the basics of, you know, cleaning wounds, treating wounds, stopping the bleeding. You know, geez, I actually had to do it was a life-threatening thing, but I did a Heimlich maneuver when the rest of my family was sitting there. My sister-in-law swallowed a clove of garlic because Dr. Oz says, you know, eat a clove of garlic, and she swallowed this thing. I mean, it was a chunk, it was huge. She went to go swallow the thing and tried downing water with it and couldn't get it down. My wife's standing there, my mother-in-law standing there, my kids are standing there, my father-in-law's in the other room, and she's choking, and everybody kind of paused and panicked, and I just got right up and popped it right out of her. And, you know, I don't know if it's Marine training or whatever, but I came from a internet stupor, you know, responding to an email to, you know, popping that out, and that's the kind of quick thought that is going to take that could mean the life or death in the next paradigm or even this one.
Well, absolutely. Like, what is worse than being in a situation and not knowing what to do? Yeah. You know, like something happens and you're just standing like there child. And, you know, you can't contribute. You have no idea. You know, there's no sense of confidence and, you know, I can deal with this situation. That to me, that's one of the worst feelings in the world, right?
Yeah.
So why we have the opportunity now, you know, you talked earlier about silver, you know, being around at the current price, $28, I think, right now, around and 2807, and what a bargain that is, you know, and absolutely. But investing in other skills and making sure that you know, we take a holistic approach and learn those skills, so, you know. If the financial market collapses, when the financial market collapses, you know, and all these people are standing there with their jaws dropped, you know, we're not in the same situation in a first aid situation or a food situation or a water situation. You know, we have to take that. You know, I want to be kind of, maybe for lack of a better term, a Renaissance man and have all these skills. And, you know, like you said earlier, be a master of something, but, you know, a jack of all trades. Yeah. And, you know, I can deal with the situation. I'm not going to feel that panic. I'm not going to feel that, you know, that despair.
And maybe not become a master, but at least have books and references that you can say, I know where the answer is. So, you know, you have a medical book where you say, you know, how to treat a gunshot. Well, I haven't, you know, taught myself, but geez, here's a book, honey. Tell me exactly what to do and I'm going to do it because I have the tools and the information right there.
That's right. Like when we started our business a couple years ago, sections I had was books, and I got all these books on first aid and, you know, all these, you know, wilderness craft and outdoor skills and all that. And I didn't sell 10% of them. Mm-hmm. And it was such a disappointment, you know, like not because, you know, I wanted to make money or something, but because here is, you know, here is truth contained in a hard copy that, you know, I don't have to rely on something electronic. I can always reference it. It's viable, you know, essential skills, and I can always, you know, have access to it. And, you know, we don't think that way anymore. Like, we think our society in general thinks electronically and, you know, yep. Oh, I'll just go on the internet and learn how to do this. Well, it might not always be there, you know, or you might not have access to it or whatever. And getting books and you know, you're absolutely right. You may not know how to do something, but you can make reference to, you know, a book or material or you know, find it and say, okay, this is how we're going to do this, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the you're right with the digital thing is because, like, even our music, I mean, here I was, I have a box full of CDs down there, and I can't get rid of them, even though I have all these, you know, things on iPads and computers and stuff like that. I still have the physical copy of those songs because I need it. But you're right, just like your silver situation, you know, where you were the only guy to buy silver from that bank for 3 months. You know, the books are the same thing where it's just that there's only a small percentage of the population that is even available to even think about this type of stuff. And I knew that, INTJ is the personality type that I have. And chances are, you know, probably 50, 60, 70% of our group is, you know, these kind of creative problem thinkers who have logic and are able to think outside the box and would even consider this. But, you know, if the internet's still up and you're still in business, can tell you what, after the collapse, man, you're going to be a very busy buddy as people start to going, oh shit, I have not prepared and I need to get things going quickly and be able to move things along.
No, you're absolutely right, you know, and it's so important to gain the skills now while we have the opportunity, because, you know, you always talk about, where people always talk about, you know, how much time we have left, and you know, I'm not into making any predictions or anything like that. I have no idea, right?
No one knows.
But right now, the day is today, right? And you know, like, get up off your chair today, go out and learn something that, you know, is going to benefit you for the rest of your life. Get to the library, you know, get a book that you're not familiar with. Go out, buy a good piece of kit that you can rely on. You know, learn a skill. You know, buy a bushel of wheat, pack it in Mylar, you know, do something today that down the road is going to pay dividends, you know, and, you know, just don't wait, don't procrastinate. And the people with our mindset, I think for the most part, you know, we don't see ourselves as procrastinators, but even my, you know, myself, when I start looking around, it's like, yeah, I got to do that. And I've been meaning to do that for, you know, a while now. Well, yeah. You know, we need that push sometimes. We need that shove, you know, we need our spouse to say, you know, what about this? And, you know, and get us up off the chair and, you know, do what we need to do today, because tomorrow we might not have the opportunity, you know, That's right. Who knows, right? Like, you know, in September the 10th, everyone, you know, no one saw September the 11th, right? Like, no. So, you know, you never know what tomorrow is going to bring.
And what we're going to see is going to be much more, I think hundreds of times worse than 9/11. Here I was living in New York City. I could actually see the towers falling from where I worked. And the reality is the whole world changed on 9/11, but the reality is it didn't change all that much. You know, the economy still functioned. People were still buying cars. Like, yeah, I got, you know, activated in the Marines, you know, a few months later, you know, and my life changed. But the reality is the majority of humanity, nothing changed for them. I mean, you know, outside of the immediate impact zone of towers falling down and the Pentagon and, you know, Shanksville, people's lives really didn't change all that much. And this dollar collapse, everybody all over the world all at once is going to feel this. And that's why I keep calling it the single largest event in human history will be this. And it's everything that changes. And it's not just, you know, a physical reality. It's a mental reality. It's a spiritual reality, a financial reality, you know, all sorts of stuff on many different levels, and nothing's going to prepare you for this. So all we can do is just, you know, like I said earlier, you know, be nimble and, you know, and stay and listen very carefully of what's coming. And I hope that this information was helpful to people. Chris, if people want to reach you or your site, or do you have special offers for us, or how people can find you, or, you know, internet or whatever you got, just let us know.
Okay. My business is Providence Supplies, and it's just like our website is providencesupplies.com.
Can you spell that?
P-R-O-V-I-D-E-N-C E S U P P L I E S and then .com.
Okay.
It's just like it sounds, Providence Supplies. And we don't ship too much to the States. Mm-hmm. I do partner with a little bit with someone down in the States. So, but you know what? That doesn't matter. If someone wants to call me or send me an email or whatever and ask about mm-hmm. questions that they have, how to store food in Mylar, or you know, how do we purify water in this situation, or what do we, just call me. I don't care where sure. you know you're calling from or anything like that. Right? Like, feel free to
to
call me
and.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So anything I can do to help, I'll do, right? So you know, it's a pleasure, right? Like, I mean, you talk a lot about a sense of community, and that's so important, right? Because we're not in this game alone either. You know, there's you know, the person out there by themselves is going to fail, right? You know, you have to work as a cohesive unit, you know, to succeed. It's that simple, right? So the more people that, you know, you or I can help and you know, shake out of the stupor of this current paradigm and thinking that it's going to go on indefinitely, you know, I'll gladly do, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. And while this community is very loosely knit, more just an ideological one at this point, after this happens, we're going to be very, and I keep saying that I think we're going to be historically significant, because I can't think of another period in human history that will be so dramatic, and that we have a good group of people who see this coming, are mentally aligned for it, or physically aligned for it, or spiritually aligned for it. You know, I gave that example of Conrad Hilton in The Ultimate Exit Strategy, where he lost everything in the Great Depression, and yet was able to get back on his feet with one hotel back in 1937. It was able to build a multi-billion-dollar empire off of that. And I think what we're going to see is much more dramatic of a shock than the Great Depression. And I think that individually, some of us are going to be able to do spectacular things. But if we're able to kind of align into something much bigger and better, I think we're going to be historically significant and provide a real change, a real way out for humanity, so we don't have to fall back into whatever next Hegelian dialectic paradigm that they got cooked up for us with some another false, unsustainable, collective psychopath at the top way of life. We can do something that's more sustainable, so that we can leave our kids and our, you know, the future generations a better way of living.
No, I couldn't agree more. It's an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Chris. And, you know, if people want to reach you, it's providencesupplies.com.
That's right.
And I guess your phone number is on the website, so people can.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they can look it up on the website there. I have email and a phone number on there. And, you know, feel free, like, if there's questions and concerns that I can help with, like I said, you know, I'm more than willing, right?
Okay. Sounds good, Chris. I appreciate the call. We're going to wrap it up here, and I appreciate you coming on, and we'll be in touch again in the future. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, you're welcome, and thank you.
All right. Take care.